Welcome to the Do Your Good podcast series. In this podcast series, you'll hear from me, Sybil, and other experts in the field to help you make your money matter and make a huge difference in the world. I come to you with over two decades of experience as a person who's helped donors give away over $45 million in donations, both large and small. This podcast series is meant to give you the tools you need to be effective in the world and fund nonprofits and issues that you care about with meaning and purpose, and to make a true, deep difference in the world. Tony, this is going to be a lot of fun. You're a dear friend, and I've been wanting to track you down to interview you for my podcast because you're now executive director of the Latino Network. And man, I think I met you first in the 90s, right?
Yes, and it's lovely to reconnect and really appreciate the chance to talk with you today.
Yeah, Tony. So I wanted to track you down because you have so much experience as a nonprofit leader fundraising, and you have best and worst experiences and great advice to us donors on how to approach and work with nonprofit leaders in an effective way, and then what not to do. And that's the theme of season three for my podcast. Before we go there, Tony, can you talk to my listeners about who you are? What got you motivated to do what you do in your career?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks again. And, you know, it's wonderful to be here. I have been a nonprofit professional now for most of my adult life. I've been in various roles for about 30 years now. And, you know, I think what's most important for folks to hear is just that, you know, the recent experiences at Verde, an environmental justice organization based in Portland. I was there for about 12 years in the final role there as executive director, and now currently as executive director at Latino Network. I've been in this role for about 3 years. And then just a couple of other pieces. I've served on many, many boards and have also been in the role of donor. And so I feel like I have a good appreciation for the breadth of the nonprofit experience.
Yeah, which is why I wanted you on this podcast, because I value your perspective. Let's talk about some of your best experiences fundraising and what made it so great. What made the good things happen?
Well, I have to confess, first off, that I love to fundraise. So, you know, in some ways, I may not be the typical ED, but it's really what I love to do. And on behalf of the communities I serve, you know, I will start off with that caveat. And so, you know, in that vein, I haven't had a lot of bad experiences. You know, I'm really feel very fortunate. But I think that's also because I approach it with a lens of no matter what is in the relationship between the funder and grantee, there's always an opportunity for a relationship. And I think, you know, that's what's been most important for me in kind of framing my experiences around fundraising. And I feel fortunate there's only been a few examples over time where that relationship hasn't been opportunity for a relationship. And I think those experiences where it's either purely transactional or, you know, there's some level of disrespect between the parties have been experiences where I would characterize those as poor. And like I said, I can count on one hand those experiences over the last 20 plus years. And that's a good thing. You know, I think there are some trends I'd love to talk about in philanthropy past and present that I think might be helpful to get into here.
Now, let's get into the trends first, and then let's get into your good experiences. I don't want to lose track of that.
Sure. That's great. I think what I've seen over the decades here is very hesitant and then a little bit of gaining steam in the philanthropic community to be, you know, have greater understanding of the needs and priorities of communities of color and what that really means relative to philanthropy. And, you know, I think philanthropy has been, you know, really an institution born out of protecting wealthy folks' money and creating benefits as that wealth has been protected. And it hasn't been born out of the needs and priorities of communities that have been most impacted by lack of opportunities to build wealth and lack of opportunities to create philanthropy of our own. And I think what I've seen shift over the decades here has been this very gradual understanding of the need to center communities that are most impacted by the various social ills that we face as a society, and the understanding that that requires deeper levels of investigation, of analysis, of relationship with those communities. And what we see now is just the beginning, really, of that deeper understanding, analysis, and relationships between philanthropic sector and communities of color that are just starting to bear fruit in terms of richer relationships, certainly funding that meets the needs and priorities of communities, and, you know, not just the funding itself, but the processes by which we engage in philanthropy itself.
That's a really interesting and important trend that you're talking about. And I don't even know if I want to call it a trend. It's a shift in thinking, right?
Yeah.
And recently with, for example, the Supreme Court decisions around affirmative action and college campuses, it sounds like some of those conversations are now also coming into the foundation world. What's your take on some of that, those pieces? Because, gosh, there's just such a hard conversation. These are hard conversations.
And now for an ad, but don't go away because Tony has lots more to say.
Hello, everyone. I want to let you know that I am putting forward a pretty exciting new podcast season, which is going to focus on the journey I took with one of my clients to think through effective funding strategies to reduce firearm-related suicide in rural and remote communities, specifically looking at Oregon as an example. So tune in to my podcast series September 30th through October 21st. Every Monday, I'll have a new special episode specifically discussing this issue. Thanks a lot.
Well, you know, I think what's a constant relative to, you know, resource development for communities of color is that there always has been, and there will always be these various kinds of barriers, policy, you know, institutional racism, lack of networks, you know, the list goes on and on, that separate communities of color from the resources that they need to be able to thrive. And I think what's really fantastic about this shift is that as the philanthropic sector has, you know, awakened to both the pervasive racism that has, you know, kind of characterized the sector, to the need for that kind of understanding and analysis and opening to deeper relationships, you know, some of those barriers have started to really go away in some ways, not go away, but like be alleviated, I should say. And, you know, I think what's really helpful to look at is, you know, how many instances we can point to of, you know, philanthropic institutions across the range, family foundations, donor advised funds, larger, you know, granting institutions, public and private, and start to see in instances, you know, the real understanding around what are the kinds of things that communities need. They need unrestricted general operating support. They need multi-year support. They need streamlined and easier application and reporting processes. And as those have started to unfold in specific instances, we now see, you know, some of those starting to be adopted across the sector. And I think what's still very much needed is this, you know, broader effort at addressing the kinds of barriers that still exist. And you named one of them, you know, Supreme Court recent decision. There's always going to be this push back to progressive changes that we as a society make. And what's really important is that we really keep our eyes on the prize around aligning philanthropic priorities around the needs and priorities of communities that need it most, and really digging even deeper to unlock those doors and those barriers to making it much, much easier to build those relationships around creating the resources that are needed.
Thanks, Tony. And this is a good segue into getting more personal about this. So what are your best experiences linked into this? Seems like you're feeling positive about the trends. So give us some examples, some real life examples.
I am. And, you know, I started this conversation with the I love to fundraise, and I pair that with being a relentlessly positive and optimistic person. So, you know, I think I don't want that to discount, though, that, you know, I think broadly we still have so far to go. I mean, I think the paucity of funding to communities of color and tribal nations is still a huge cause for alarm, reckoning, and in this sector. And so I don't want to downplay that. But what I do want to lift up is really the ways that work. And I think for your audience across the range of philanthropic folks, there are so many ways that we can be in good relationship with each other. And it starts with really that understanding and analysis. And so what I've found to be the most positive experiences in philanthropy have been situations where the individuals that are either representing philanthropic folks, donor advised funds or family foundations or the bigger institutions who are really armed with that deeper knowledge of the history and contemporary status of communities of color and tribal communities in this country. And that's just this excellent starting place that I found where when you're dealing with someone who has some of that knowledge, even if it's imperfect and it's in development, but it just makes it so much easier to kind of, you know, get to the nut of what we're talking about. And then, you know, deepening that understanding to that analysis of how does that really come into play with respect to grant making, you know, those instances where I've had working with family foundations, for example, and folks saying, hey, we understand from a starting point that we want to start off with unrestricted general operating. I mean, that's just a huge sigh of relief for an executive director or program staff who've been plagued with, you know, very sharply identified deliverables for so many years. And then lastly, I think, you know, really that co-conspirator rather than, you know, the arm's length have been some of my most positive experiences where there's been funders that have been more actively engaged with the processes of philanthropy and even to some extent co-creating some of the work that's being done. And I think there's a lot of room for further investigation of that area.
Great. And give me a real life example of that.
You know, recently I was involved with an effort to, you know, co-create some significant funding around Latinx communities in the state of Oregon. And, you know, what I think came out of that for me was my own kind of like hesitancy around the role of program officers in being part of, you know, communities, identifying their priorities, moving those into action and creating the resources needed to do so. And I think what I learned in that was not only can that be a very fertile ground for creating more community control over philanthropic assets. And I want to just pause and make it clear, like, you know, all this wealth that's been created and is currently being managed by various parts of the philanthropic sector, it is the resources of communities of color and tribal communities. All of those resources have been built on the backs of low-income people, people of color, tribal folks in particular. And I just think, you know, to me, the North Star here is really greater community. And when I say community, I mean communities of color and tribal communities, control over these resources. And, you know, to start to co-create is an important step. You know, I think it's important to notice that it's not just about saying, hey, here's these funds and go perform on these deliverables you're telling us to do. And it's not just saying, like, here's these funds and here it's general operating and you do what you need to do. But it's really about, to me, how do we create more dollars every time we partner together?
And now for an ad, but don't go away because Tony has lots more to say. So it feels like when you were saying the program officers were working with you to co-create, that was your positive experience because they weren't overbearing, the program officers from the foundations, sounds like, but you were co-creating so they could help bring in even more resources to priorities that the community set forward. Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Cool.
Yep. And I think...
Hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you're enjoying my podcast. In my podcast, I hope to talk to you, the wonderful donors and philanthropists that I work with, to help you think through the most effective way to make your money matter. I also, in my podcast series and through all my trainings, want to help and support the nonprofits that are out there trying to raise money and hone their pitch. Because I'm somebody that works with donors, I get pitched all the time by amazing nonprofit leaders, so I know what it takes to raise money effectively. Please check out everything I have to offer at www.doyourgood.com. I have a whole host of course materials and lessons, videos, downloadable documents, a blog that I keep updated. All of it is 100% free for you to see and review and learn from. Please check it out. Again, www.doyourgood.com. Thanks a lot.
You know, because we're in a state where we just, the situations are so dire, whether it's climate, whether it's economic disparities, whether it's health disparities, we have to get to the point where we're unlocking more of those dollars. And I think the way to do that, A, is relationships and understanding, but B, is really having that more active engagement. And I think it's always this kind of firewall. And I think, you know, the more we can be in relationship together as community, I think the more we can have greater control of those resources and create more resources.
So helpful, Tony. And really, I really appreciate that. In terms of like an example or two, word of warning for us funders, what we should not do. You hinted to what that was already, but do you have some real life examples? Of course, I'm always careful where this is not an I gotcha interview. We'll mix up facts just a little bit so that we're not putting anybody out, but would love for you to flesh out a little bit more of your experiences where it didn't go so well to remind us.
Yeah, thanks. I think there's a lot of the basics still of, you know, from whether it's program officer or, you know, consultant who's repping for a family foundation, you know, number one is that respect and just not replicating these kind of patterns of patron to supplicant or grantee is important. You know, one of the things I've experienced in the past has been just some of the really onerous and almost impossible to reach analysis that is required to secure funding. And in, you know, in one instance that involved, you know, literally multiple years of creating and revising pro formas, projecting revenue in situations where there was very speculative kinds of revenue to be projected. And, you know, it was, you know, clear to me that it just wasn't a fit, but instead of being honest about that and saying, hey, this isn't a fit, let's come back to this in a few years, because no is never a final answer. It just was kind of like, let's slog through this. And it was, you know, kind of a miserable experience. And so I think, you know, to me, that's something to really think carefully about as a funder and what you're asking folks to do. And then, you know, really being honest up front and acknowledging when there's going to be a no, but also acknowledging that this person, this organization is likely going to still need this resource. And how do we successfully create that resource?
Thanks for that, Tony. And can you give my listeners any high-level words of advice before you go? Because I just feel like you're so helpful in highlighting the things we should be thinking about. Anything else you want to offer for us?
Yeah, it's time to be big and bold. You know, I can't, you know, with respect to the Latinx communities that I serve every day in this role, in some ways, we've been continually moving ourselves forward and, you know, in any way, shape, or form we can. And in some ways, things have been as worse as they have been. And, you know, that's a hard thing to say because our progress has been so steady as a community. And I can look across various sectors, having worked in the environmental sector for many years, our progress has been so steady and things would be so much worse today if it weren't for that progress. And at the same time, things are, you know, just teetering on the precipice of disaster every day. And so I think it's time to be bold in, you know, really doubling down on, you know, if you're proposing to have some racial justice strategy at the core of your giving, double down on it. If you're proposing to have an environmental advocacy focus, then I would say double down on environmental justice. Because the communities that are being hit hardest right now are communities of color and tribal communities. And it's just critical that we radically increase the amount of resource that's been available. And what you're seeing our communities do in lieu of that is to create our own resource. And that involves all kinds of measures that usually involve taxes on high-income earners or going after, you know, corporate activity taxes. And those are not pleasant fights to have, but we are in situations where we have no choice but to go after and create those kinds of resources. And I think there's just such a role here for doing those things together in ways that can be much more palatable to broader communities and really create these bigger resources that we so desperately need.
Thanks, Tony. As usual, quite articulate and helpful. No surprise there. And I can't wait to see you just for fun. Let's go have a happy hour together soon. And just best of luck to you.
Sybil, it's been great. Thank you so much.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I enjoyed making it for you. So if you want to find out more about what I have to offer, please check out www.doyourgood.com and learn more ways to make your money matter. Until next time, do your good and be well.